So welcome to Confessions of a Serial Seller. I'm super excited to have this guest with me today. I actually saw this gentleman speak, it must have been now about 10 years ago, as a sales conference. I think it was working with MTD Sales many, many years ago. And I was super impressed with him and have followed him ever since. He is an international keynote speaker. He is a sales transformation specialist, and he's an author of 5 best-selling books, the Bare Knuckle series, The Inner Winner, and NeuroSell. Simon Hazeldine, welcome to the show.
Tony, thank you very much for having me. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Oh, good. Thank you. And it really was, I think it was 10 years ago when I saw you speak on stage.
Must have been. Yes, I remember, remember the event very, very well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was really impressed with your content and your delivery.
Thank you.
And I'm delighted to have you now as a guest. So tell my listeners a little bit about your journey, how you got into the world of sales.
Yeah, I think, like probably quite a lot of your listeners, Tony, I think I sort of ended up in sales by accident. So I think it was Brian Tracy who originally said something like, you end up in selling if you can't find a proper job. And, you know, I'd been to university. The only thing I knew when I came out of uni was I definitely didn't want to do what I'd done my degree in. And so I did a couple of probably quite dead-endish kind of jobs. I'd had a usual rubbish student jobs, and I managed to extend one of those. And I was really just not sure what to do. Mm. And I received a piece of advice. Somebody said to me, you should be in sales because you talk a lot. Actually, as we all know, that's probably the worst advice that I was given. But I ended up working over the telephone in a company. It was a kind of a welding machine manufacturer. And I started sort of being the person who was taking customers' orders, inbound orders and phoning and all that. Started to get into like the mindset and seemed to enjoy it, and the company seemed to sort of feel I was pretty decent at it. And then I was offered an opportunity. Someone else said, you know, I can't remember who it was, you know, if you want to go into sales, the best place to start is going cold calling. So kind of not knowing any better, through a contact, I ended up going door to door for firstly canvassing for a mortgage company.
Yeah.
And then one of the mortgage canvassers took me on one side and said, oh, Sky Television's going to be launching and they're looking for canvassers. And it's like 25 quid if you get anybody to sign up. This is really early days.
Yeah.
And so I had a 9-to-5 job Monday to Friday. And then 6 o'clock, I'd go out knocking doors with Sky Television. And I can't remember, but it was a long time ago. But I was kind of like making 500 quid or something in the evenings and less in the day. And I thought, okay, but I was smart enough, I think, to realize this probably wasn't going to last forever. Got a telephone sales job. And after a while, I saw an advert in the local paper for a big FMCG company that was recruiting salespeople. Went along for the interview, was successful. And that was probably my absolute lucky break, was 4 weeks residential sales training with one of the UK's leading FMCG companies. Brilliant. So absolute, you know, intensive on camera, on video, learning how to sell, etc. It wasn't until much later I probably realized how really, really lucky. And then also what they did, once you started in the field, your boss came out with you at least 2 times a week and coaching visits. And they were, I mean, amazing, amazing focus. So, and a lot of the people from that organization now occupying very senior roles in some big company names, you know. So, yeah, that was a by accident, and then I think a lucky break, and then ever since then, been in sales.
Obviously, you've been on stage in many countries, you know, delivering at conferences, and I know as a sales transformation specialist, you've worked with probably thousands and thousands of salespeople. In your valued opinion, in today's world, and I'm not talking about lockdown per se,
okay,
in today's world, almost pre-lockdown, what do you believe it takes to be a top sales performer in today's world?
Okay, so I think what we now got to understand is, I mean, I work almost exclusively in B2B. So my comments are around B2B, but I think they'll also apply to B2C salespeople as well. I think the big shift is obviously like many industries and like many things in life, the internet has affected it enormously. Mm. And I think the big shift now is that buyers are pre-researching before they want to engage with a salesperson. So I think it was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I'm sure you've seen the data, was, I think if I recall correctly, B2B buyers are typically 57% of the way through their buying process before they wish to engage with a salesperson. And also the data showed that 75% of salespeople think they're doing a good job of differentiating themselves, but only 3% of customers think they are, which is probably the reason they're not interested in engaging with the salesperson. Yeah. So they're researching, they're identifying, they're forming preconceptions and pre-opinions. So I think the really good salespeople now are the ones that enter the customer's buying process really, really early. Mm. And so you've got maximum influence and trying to open, almost trigger, if you can trigger the buying process, I think that is that is clear. Mm. And I think, you know, modern sellers have to do more research, because it probably used to be an okay question to ask pre the internet, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Customer, please tell me about your company, please tell me your organization. Yeah. If you say that now, a lot of them are going to be thinking, well, why don't you know about me?
Yeah, like, why haven't you bothered?
Why haven't you looked at my website? You know, and I have a look on their LinkedIn profile. You know, so I think you've got to be a lot more planned and prepared. I think a bit more strategic in your approach, in how we engage with customers. And also, I think particularly in B2B, you know, I think a number of sellers struggle with picking off enough people who are in the decision-making unit, you know, multiple stakeholders. I think that is definitely a skill to develop. As I would say, where I'm really trying to raise my game over the next 6 to 12 months is in social selling as well, and leveraging platforms like LinkedIn, you know, really putting a lot of focus and a lot of effort on that, because Microsoft has spent a huge amount of money on LinkedIn and they're going to be, you know, with Microsoft behind it, it's probably one of the best lead gen tools on the market. I mean, Sales Navigator is a fantastic, fantastic piece.
Absolutely.
You know, I love it to bits.
Absolutely.
I think that's probably the big shifts that I would see.
I want to pick up on two things you said there. You said about 75% of salespeople think they know how to differentiate themselves.
Yeah.
3% actually consider them different. What's your best advice of how, as an organization, you can differentiate yourself?
Yeah, because, well, I'll tell you what not to do first, which is what I see when I run in sort of value proposition seminars, workshops, pitching workshops in various, you know, Dunning Valley said, very kindly said, lots of countries and in a number of industries. I typically see the same 5 or 6 PowerPoint slides every time. They're a slight variation. There's a title slide with the customer's logo on it, so they've customized it. You know, slide 2 is, here's some stuff about us, we're great, and then there's another slide just in case you don't think we're great, here's some more stuff. And if it's a large company, then invariably here's a map of the world showing all of our office locations and some awards we've won that you don't care about.
I've
even had, here are the 2 people who founded our company in 1857. Why have you got the pictures of the Victorian guys? And the guy said, well, it's our heritage. And I said, look, it's really impressive. And probably at some stage in your story, you maybe want to mention that. But please, in the first 5 minutes, talk about the customer.
Yes.
Talk about the customer. Yeah. Here's what we understand so far about your situation. Here's what we understand about what you're looking for. Here's what we understand about the problems. Here's how we can help you. And I see it so often, and it's so basic, but a lot of selling is about really good implementation of the basic stuff before you get to... Yeah, and get out your own head, get inside their head. Mm. And then I think when you win business, always do win-loss reviews, always do a win-loss. Mm. It's horrible. I hate losing. But if you're going to lose the sale, don't lose the learning, as the cliche goes.
Yeah.
Ask your existing happy regular customers, what is it that you like? What is it that makes you choose us on an ongoing basis? What makes us different?
Yeah.
And you might be surprised sometimes that it's not quite as dynamic and innovative and sexy as you might think it is. They might just say, you're very flexible, you're very easy. And if you hear the same thing coming out that will probably be your point of differentiation. Mm. You might have been a little... Always ask the customer, always ask the market, you know.
Great advice. Really yeah. good advice.
They'll tell you, and be prepared to be a bit disappointed sometimes. Yeah, it's not...
Absolutely. But no, that's a great tip, actually. And you spoke there about psychology.
Yeah.
And I know you wrote one of your five books was NeuroCell.
Yeah. Well, the inner winner was on psychology. I did my master's in sort of performance psychology. So the inner winner is sort of my academic thesis turned into something a bit more readable and interesting. And NeuroCell was an evolution from my interest in psychology to neuroscience. So I qualified to use a neuroscience-based profiling instrument. It's called PRISM brain mapping, PRISM brain mapping. Okay. And I was halfway through the training and I thought, God, this would make a really good book, and approached the wonderful Dr. Colin Wallace, who owns PRISM, who's an expert.
Yeah.
And I said, I think there needs to be a book on this. He said, well, if you write it, he said, I'll give you my technical support and help. And so it's incredible. So it was the hardest book I think I've ever had to write, because to be valid and scientifically accurate. But we've learned more in the last 5 to 10 years about how that brain inside our customer's head works, you know, and I think we'll continue to do so. And so, you know, understanding what brains like, what they don't like. And I have a few little phrases: uncomfortable brains don't buy, confused brains don't buy, you know, things that I've drawn out of neuroscience research to help sellers to just better understand that. And a lot of great salespeople are kind of amateur psychologists, as I am, you know.
Absolutely.
But if you've got a fascination with what's going on inside your customer's head, then that's a really good attitude to have in sales, full stop.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I always say, I've studied NLP, and one of the things that really resonated with me was, you know, if you see the world through John Smith's eyes, you're more likely to get John Smith to buy from you. And I love that. I love that.
And that's a big part of what I put in NeuroCell was using the PRISM model of personality to do what's called adaptive selling, which is exactly what you're, which is exactly. So I think one size, the other thing I probably should have said earlier when you said what's changed, one size fits all, just forget it.
Yeah.
Absolutely forget it. Because I saw Neil Rackham, the guy who wrote Spin Selling, at the Sales Performance Association a few years ago. And Neil, who is a genius in sales, I mean, the guy deserves the title guru.
Yeah.
He talked about like a continuum of more transactional selling, some customization added value, and then full customization. And he said the middle ground is going to disappear.
Mm.
And I think we're seeing more transactional selling is going to go online.
Yes.
So sellers are going to have to be able to be far more adaptive, flexible, and focused in that way.
Yes.
Because it's really easy to buy from Amazon.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And he's
done all right during lockdown, hasn't he, old Mr. Bezos?
Oh, but he's increased his fortune. And I think what some people refer to as the Amazon effect is that B2B buyers, their personal B2C experiences are affecting how they want to be looked after and served by their B2B suppliers and vendors, you know, in terms of speed and information and simplicity and those sort of things. So, you know, I think we're going to be evolving as salespeople. We're going to be evolving as a species, hopefully, towards that.
That's a really interesting perspective. And tell, for my readers who maybe don't have the psychological understanding or background, can you share some ideas of things that are very important to understand about how our buyers see the world or how their brain does work that can
I think the key couple of key points. One is to never underestimate the role of emotion in decision making. So there will always be a strong emotional, you know, research shows that, you know, probably the influence on buying decisions and behavior is the vast majority is going to be from the more emotional regions of the brain versus the rational. So that emotional connection, making them feel comfortable. And adaptive selling is about reading the customer, body language, etc., behavior, emails, and thinking, okay, I've got one of four broad. I mean, we should be very careful about stereotyping.
Yes. But
you know, and many of your listeners will probably know things like DISC or whatever models. Sure. So, you know, you've got some buyers are very analytic, are very careful, very cautious, going to want lots of information. Yeah. Some are big fast movers, big picture. Yeah. Some respond really well to enthusiasm, some very relationship and very steady buyers.
Yeah.
So we've got to, I think, you know, speed up, slow down, more information, less information.
Yeah.
Your comment about seeing the world through their eyes.
Yeah.
Is if you don't consider those differences, your default will be your own style.
Of course.
And you think, well, I've given the guy as much information as anybody possibly need. What more do they need?
Yeah.
And that person is going, I really want to make this decision right the first time.
Yeah.
And I really need to go through this.
Yes.
And so I think we need to be doing that. And you can have a look at their, for example, have a look at how they describe themselves on LinkedIn. So unless they're a very senior person and they've had somebody write it for them, they use language that, and that gives you a clue.
That's brilliant.
There's a plugin, Crystal Nose, which is a DISC based, and sits in on Chrome. Yeah. And so I would look at Tony Morris and I'd activate Crystal and it would give me an insight into your personality based on your behavior online.
Love that.
So that's...
I was going to ask that actually. So you've triggered a thought, is what are the telltale signs to be able to identify someone's behavior quite quickly, especially now we're in the virtual world?
Yeah. So previously what I would have said, part of what you have to do to qualify as a practitioner for Prism is you have to meet two strangers and interview them and then draw the profile and then compare it to their. And Colin Wallace said, first thing is, you know, if they come in fast, they tend to be one particular personality. And if they move in slowly, they're the other. The amount of information they share, etc. So, you know, it's like when I speak on this, once I've orientated people to the styles, I put up some genuine LinkedIn profiles where I've taken the text of clients that I work with, anonymized it, but I know their profile. And I put it up and people just go, that's the red driver. That's the blue steadiness. That's the gold analytical. And like your email, you know, I send you an email. Hey, Tony, should we get together 2 p.m. to go through the proposal? Some of them are going to go, works for me. Right. And you know, that's likely to be red driver. Yes. Hey, Tony, !! That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Looking forward. That's your expressive. Yeah. Dear Tony, yes, 2 p.m. will be good. Can you please come prepared to share the extra? And you can send me this in a minute. And you go, okay, that's your gold.
Yeah.
And then the blue steadiness. And it was a genuine one I got.
Yeah.
Email was about 3 paragraphs long. We're having the guest car park, visitors car park tarmac. So please make sure when you arrive, you go to this car park and I've arranged a parking space for you and all this stuff. And you know, with their personality, when I do it on steroids, if I offer somebody, I'll say, well, if you'd like to do the profile, I'll bring it along to the meeting. I've got their buying strategy.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that though. Great. I love that clever tip though. Look at their LinkedIn. Everyone, especially B2B.
Have a look and see what they say. And also, not just the personality, but, you know, have a look. Where did they go to university? Where did they, you know, because sometimes you get a lucky break and there's a lovely conversation starter in there, you know. I was looking at your profile and I noticed you went to, you know,
absolutely.
I don't know.
Shows you're interested, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned Zig Ziglar earlier and he's one of my heroes in sales. And I was very, I never met him, but I was fortunate to interview his son, Tom Ziglar, a couple
of years ago. Great.
Cool. Amazing. What would you say is some of the best advice that either you've read or that you personally learned through your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always just been a learner, you know, so I used to drive around back in the day, listening to Zig Ziglar and Brian Tracy on cassette tape, you know, in between calls. At one stage, I covered the whole country. I was doing 1,000 miles a week, so. You know, I can't remember who said it to me, but you know, turn your car into a classroom. You know, it's always got to be, every day's a school day. All of those sort of cliches. I think when I moved from being a sales rep to being an account manager, managing a territory for the first time, I was really lucky. I had a new boss, a guy called Philip, and he became quite a mentor to me. And we sat down for a one-to-one after 2 weeks, and he said, "How's he going?" And I was like, "Really? Oh, I'm going busy, busy, busy." And I was telling him all the stuff. And he went, "What have you got planned for the next month then?" And I went, "Oh, I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go here, and I'm going to go." Blah, blah, blah. And he went, looking at my diary, he said, "Wow," he said, "you're really busy." "Yeah, yeah, I'm really busy. I'm really busy."
Yeah.
And he said, "Simon, when are you planning on doing any thinking?"
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like went, "I beg your pardon."
Yeah. He said,
when are you planning on doing any thinking? And I went, "Huh?" And he said, "You're an account manager now. You've got to manage a territory." He said, "You've got to think about," and he taught me the 80-20, the Pareto principle.
Yeah.
And which are your most important customers and all of those, all this. And he had this lovely expression. He said, "Activity gets you busy. Productivity gets you results."
I love that.
And it was like, thanks, Phil. And he was the guy responsible for turning a very enthusiastic, but somewhat naive sales representative into something resembling a semi-professional account manager.
And that
links as well, to opportunity qualification. Again, a best bit of advice, qualify your opportunities properly, focus your time on the business you're most likely to win. And it's tough for us. I think we're sellers, we're pursuers, we're after things, we're positive, we're motivated, and we tend to have this can-do attitude.
Yeah.
And sometimes we go chasing stuff that really we shouldn't be.
Yes.
I
can relate to that 100%.
It's the flip side of what makes you a success sometimes. Yeah. Is biggest strength can be your weakness if it's overdone, So
you mentioned a really lovely point early, and I hadn't heard it, your expression about if you lose a deal, don't lose the lesson.
Yeah.
And I've heard a quote, I think it was Nelson Mandela, I think, who said you never lose, but you win and you learn. And I love that. I love that thinking, that process. What would you say has been your best, either your best sale that you're most proud of that maybe taught you the most, or conversely, your biggest lesson from a deal that you lost?
Yeah, I can do both, actually. So quickly, it's probably 4 years ago, so I should have known better. And I was coming back from being in Hamburg for a week, and it was a company that are about a mile and a half from where I live, and come in as an inbound lead inquiry. And I was, in my defense, I was probably half watching the clock because of my flight and all this sort of stuff. So I went through the initial conversation. I said, "Yeah, I think that sounds like something I can help you with. And where did you find out about us?" And they'd found out about a contact at a large corporate. So I drive all the way up to Chesterfield, hour and a half, having a conversation, go through, looks like we're getting great guns. And then the owner said, "And how much is this going to cost?" And I quoted standard fee, and she went white, and she went, "Oh my God," she said, "why is it so expensive?" And all this sort of stuff. She said, "I've had a quotation in from a local, someone local who can do it for like a quarter of," and I was a bit like, "You idiot."
Yeah.
Budget authority needs timing, right? So can you make the decision? What do you need? What's the timing? Have you got the money? Yeah. And it was just, I was driving back from Chesterfield thinking, "You idiots."
Yeah.
How many times have you stood in front of sellers and said, "Find the money"? So, just as a dumb, and probably when I was the a med tech client, it started off with one piece of work. And it was also an account management principle. A lot of sellers use it, land and expand. So get inside the organization, get on the books, get some revenue, and then expand.
Yeah.
And it expanded from doing some sales coaching workshops for about four or five iterations or something. That was the initial thing, to training their entire sales force across EMEA. And Middle East, Africa, etc. Went to Dubai, South Africa, and then we transferred divisions. We went from one division to another division to another, and it was just this just wonderful land and expand strategy coming to fruition. If only they were all so
absolutely,
But it was just land and expand is the easiest people to sell to are your existing customers. So it's why I like large corporates, because you can.
So many divisions and so many areas to expand.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was a great one. That was
love that. And if you went back, knowing what you know now, if you went to your first job, and maybe it was the door knocking, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently? What advice would you give?
I think I would have probably said, yeah, carry on doing the door knocking to get this under your belt. That's not a bad thing. But I think I would have definitely said, make sure you get inside an organization that's professional about selling.
Mm.
Absolutely leverage as much experience as you can get from it.
Yeah.
Because it was that they boot camped you in the basics.
Yeah.
And years later, I was on some in the same organization. It evolved and grew and expanded and emerged and one thing and another. And there were three national account managers. We were brought together from each area of the business because the MD was concerned that sales standards had slipped and he wanted us to be like a working party. And we sat there in this meeting room for the first hour going, how do you do this? And we all went, yeah, it's the way I do it. What we then realized is each of us had been boot camped at a very early formative stage in FMCG sales discipline.
Yes.
And most of it sticks
with
you. So Ida said, get that brilliant, be brilliant at the basics, I think is what I would have said to myself back then. Because once you got those in place, you can always add. But, you know, salespeople who say they want to do the advanced stuff, and then you find out they can't do some of the basic stuff. If your foundation's not in place.
Yeah.
You know.
No, very true. Very, very true. Do the basics brilliantly. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I got it. I used to do traditional Japanese karate, Wadorayu, and it probably comes from there as well, because every class used to start with like, it was a 3-hour class, an hour of going up and doing the basic moves. And I got to a reasonably senior level, and I was on this advanced class with one of the 8th Dan Sensei from, you know, and of this advanced class, the first hour was just doing the same boring, what I thought was boring. And he probably noticed my expression and called the class to a halt and came over and glared at me and said, do you find basics boring?
Yeah.
I lied. No, no, Sensei. And he glared. He said, if you build a house on weak foundations, the house falls over. Weak basics, weak karate. Strong basics, strong karate.
Love it.
And that's the same. Weak basics, weak selling.
Yeah.
Weak basics, weak negotiation. Strong basics, strong selling.
Absolutely. Strong absolutely. And you, I want to talk about your series of Bare Knuckle. Where did the name Bare Knuckle come from?
That came from a rather painful episode of some of the chaps and guys I used to work with train with.
Yeah.
Did some security work and door work and things. And so I started over doing some of that sort of stuff to make money when I was at university, and rapidly found out that what might work really well in the training hall doesn't always work very well with a rather drunk and hostile person.
Yeah.
So the bare knuckle thing was about sort of stripping it back to absolutely what works. What are the essential, no BS, no stuff, really good questioning, really good. And that was kind of, and bare knuckle selling is probably the book that gets the most, I get the most mail about, even although I'm probably the most proud of NeuroCell.
Yeah.
But a number of people have found it quite transformative because I just downloaded the stuff and I just wanted it to be no frills, no BS.
Yeah.
Practical stuff that you can use. And that was kind of where that.
What's one of your top tips from either the bare knuckle selling or maybe the bare knuckle negotiating?
Yeah, I think it's from both of them, and I've said it already, you know, get out your own head and get inside the customer's head. So critical in negotiation. Mm. You know, if I'm working with med tech or medical salespeople, you know, I always say to them, if you go and see your doctor and you said, and you'll love this, you've had the background of using this as a phrase in the past, haven't you? If you go and see your doctor and say, I'm not feeling very well, and the doctor just went, not a problem, Tony, here's some tablets, take 3 of those, you'd like run a mile, right? Because there's no diagnosis. So doctors can't prescribe without diagnosis. Salespeople shouldn't present until they've diagnosed the customer's needs properly.
Yeah.
And a very common mistake I see salespeople making when they're negotiating is they don't shift gear when we've moved from selling into negotiating, and they're still proposing too much, they're talking too much, they're giving away too much information, they're not gathering enough information.
Yes.
And you got it, the wrong way around, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, brilliant. I know you've got a library of books behind you, and we were speaking before we went live, but you love a good book. What would you say is your top three sales books that you've ever read?
Yeah, firstly, definitely influenced by Robert Cialdini. I think is a classic.
Yes. Compliance officers, he called it, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I think a book that was really influential on me was Neil Rackham's Spin Selling, which was, you know, at that stage, before Rackham came up with that consultative solution selling approach, largely the market was sort of more based on the psychology of selling life insurance from like 1924, E.K. Strong, I think it is, which is open and closed question. Nothing wrong with that stuff, but Rackham was absolutely. And I think guys who probably expanded that, Let's Get Real or Let's Not Play, Maham Khalsa and Randy Illig, is really good for more complex B2B.
Yeah.
And he's excellent on opportunity qualification.
Fantastic.
So I think Mahan and Randy do a great. That will definitely be a recommendation.
Fantastic. And Simon, where's the best place for my listeners to reach out, learn about some of the great stuff you're doing and the courses and obviously all your books?
Yeah, so it's all on my website, www.simonhazeldine.com. SimonHazeldine. It's pronounced Dean, spelt Dine. Don't know why. Family quirk. Or Google me. You'll find it. And then my podcast that I do with a couple of my sales buddies, Phil Jessen and Graham Jones, Sales Chat Show. You'll find that at saleschatshow.com. There's about 160, I think, episodes there.
Fantastic.
Where we have a bit of banter and
love it,
and talk about various sales topics. And we must get you on at some stage.
Love to. That would be fantastic. Thank you. Brilliant. Well, Simon, thank you once again.
My pleasure.
No, thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, and look, keep safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck, good selling, folks. And most importantly, keep safe.
Brilliant. Thanks, Simon.
My pleasure.